You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Twenty-five years ago, the Reverend Thomas Doyle warned the Roman Catholic bishops about the church's looming sexual abuse nightmare. And guess what? They didn't listen, folks. And Father Doyle was quietly removed from his job. A Dominican priest with a doctorate in canon law and five separate master's degrees, Reverend Thomas Patrick Doyle sacrificed a rising career at the Vatican Embassy to become an outspoken advocate for church abuse victims. Since 1984, when he became involved with the issue of sexual abuse of children by Catholic clergy while serving at the embassy, he has become an expert in the canonical and pastoral dimensions of this problem. Working directly with victims, their families, accused priests, bishops, and other high-ranking officials, Doyle has interviewed 2,000 victims of clerical sexual abuse in the United States alone, and has been the only priest to testify in court in over 200 cases as to the legal liability of the church. As an Air Force major stationed in Germany, who also recently served as military chaplain in Iraq, he holds 16 military awards and decorations for distinguished service. And it's an honor to have him on the show today, folks. Mr. Tom Doyle, you just rushed in from some serious traffic issues.
Well, when you live in this district, you never know. It's serious traffic is a way of life sometimes.
It is just a way of life. Thank you for joining us. Since you and I spoke this week, I've been doing a little research and I've been poring over some notes. And I got to say straight up, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, and I have a headache. I don't know how you do this. For how many years now?
I first became involved in the middle and summer of 1984. So basically, since 1984, fairly constantly, but the intensity has increased over about the past maybe 8 or 9 years.
I spoke with a peer of yours. Is it Richard Sipe? Is that how you say his
Richard
name?
Richard Sipe, yeah.
He has nothing but great things to say about you.
Well, same for me to him. He's like a brother to me. He's an incredible guy.
Explain to our audience who this gentleman is.
Richard Sipe is a psychologist. He's now retired from active practice. He was at Johns Hopkins University, taught there. He was a priest, and he retired from active ministry in 1970. He was a Benedictine monk priest. And then he specialized in offering psychological help and treatment to especially priests with problems. He had other clients, but he specialized in helping priests with problems with celibacy. More than 25 years ago, he started an ethnographic study of celibacy and priests, and the study went on for 25 years, and he published it in 1992 in a book called The Secret World. He's published five other books since then, one called Sex, Power, and Priests, which gives a really good in-depth light into some of the dynamic of this whole sexual abuse thing.
Well, the reason I brought his name up is because he said to me on the phone yesterday that between 45 and 50% of all Catholic priests are not practicing celibacy.
That's the result of his study and his experience, and I have no reason to disagree with that. From my own experience, I would say that's probably accurate, maybe a little conservative.
And he also said that 6 to 9%, folks, check this out, 6 to 9% of all Catholic priests get involved sexually with minors.
It's staggering. It's staggering. And
but is it true, though? Is it true, Tom?
It probably is true, and to explain it a little bit, some of the defenders of the institution say, well, it's only 1.5% and or 3% or 4%. The John Jay study, I think they came out with across the board about 5%. Sipe's figures are based on his own study plus another one that he's in the midst of right now. But that figure, to understand it completely, you have to understand that at certain periods of time, the number has been higher or lower than that. For example, at one diocese I was involved in, for one 10-year period, it appeared that about 25% of the priests were sexually involved with minors.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's staggering. And of course, my frame of reference basically is the fact that I've had so much contact with the victims, with the people who are either younger now or even older, and have suffered incredibly because of what has happened to them from sexual abuse. You hear people say a lot, well, those are old cases. They happened years ago. Why can't you just move on with your life? That's like telling somebody who's had their legs cut off to grow new ones.
You know, I read a letter that you wrote to some bishop somewhere, and the bishop responded, and the gist that I got, now, I've never seen this letter before. I've got no bias here. I've only done my research this week. I'm pretty new into this whole realm. We've talked about it before with Bill Lobdell, former religion editor with the LA Times, when we were talking about his book, Losing My Religion. But this is all pretty new for me. I'm diving into this stuff, and I feel like I'm getting overwhelmed a little bit.
It's like swimming in a cesspool, let me tell you.
Yeah. I'm a little wound up. I don't normally get wound up. I'm a Canadian. I pride myself on being happy that we got a bronze. but this has really kind of wound me up. And so I've got like 19 ways to go in this conversation. Did you see that article that Christopher Hitchens wrote? The Great Catholic Cover-Up. Did I send you that link?
You sent me the link. I read the article.
This was in the National Post.
Yeah, I read the article. I didn't find anything outrageous or shocking in it at all. I've got it sitting right on my desk here. People keep crowing that this is anti-Catholic and that's anti-Catholic. People are writing these articles and these exposures based on facts. This isn't fairy tales.
As you alluded to earlier, and I lost my train of thought there, I read this in one of the documents, a letter that you wrote to some bishop somewhere in the United States about, well, basically, why didn't we get more support from the bishops in this one conference that we're doing? And he wrote back saying, basically, you know what? Why can't people just let this go? I feel bad for those that have to keep bringing it up. That's the vibe I got.
I remember the letter that I received. That was from the president of the National Conference of Catholic Bishops in the United States. And I simply wrote to him to tell him I'd been at this conference and met 400 or 500 victims. And this was the general average feeling of these victims. A lot of anger, not so much at their perpetrators, but at the bishops for the way they'd been rejected and treated. Before I think any one of these individuals criticizes those of us who advocate for victims of sexual abuse and want to call the churches into accountability, they need to spend time with men and women who've been subjected to this and find out what it's really like.
Yeah, like maybe sit in on a snap meeting.
Sit in on a snap meeting, but even more, do that, but even more so, sit down one-on-one, keep your mouth shut, and listen to what they have to say. The stories are horrendous, and the effect that this has. Now, there's no question that rape or sexual assault at a young age leaves scars that never go away. Generally, it's called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the symptomology is established in the world of in the healthcare world. And many of these individuals, no matter what they try with therapy, it doesn't really make them whole again. But in my experience in dealing with them, I'm not a psychologist. I am a licensed addictions therapist, but not a psychologist. I do a lot of work on the spiritual realm, and that is one common denominator that I have learned is that many of them find in time that the spiritual trauma and the spiritual pain is the greatest that they experience, because they feel that there is no way to heal from that. These are all, 99% of these victims were devout, believing, card-carrying Catholics, and everything was taken away from them. The trust they had in priests, the trust they had in bishops, everything. I mean, I've talked to men and women who find that when they go into a church, they get nauseated. They just start falling apart because of the emotional reaction that's triggered by being in this environment. That's a fact. I mean, that's not fairy tales. And these are what happens to these old cases, so to speak, the ones that they want to just drop and let go. The victims are still around. They're still suffering. They're still hurting. And it gets worse because you have to bury it underneath and remain in this traumatic prison of loss and grief and shame.
On the phone with Tom Doyle, he is an expert, and many would say the expert on Catholic Church sex abuse scandals and cover-up, and you've been going at this for over 25 years now, correct?
That's correct.
I want to read to you a segment from the Christopher Hitchens, The Great Catholic Cover-Up, In 1979, an 11-year-old German boy identified as Wilford F. was taken on a vacation trip to the mountains by a priest. After that, he was administered alcohol, locked in his bedroom, stripped naked, and forced to suck the penis of his confessor. The offending cleric was transferred from Essen to Munich for, quote, therapy, by a decision of then-Archbishop Joseph Ratzinger. And assurances were given that he would no longer have children in his care. But it took no time for Ratzinger's deputy, Vicar General Gerhard Gruber, to return him to pastoral work, where he soon enough resumed his career of sexual assault. We're asking, at around 1:30 today on our show, should the Pope step down because he has protected pedophile priests? And in context with this story, what do you think, Tom?
In context with the story, in the ideal, I would say absolutely yes, because I believe firmly that there's no position in the Catholic Church that is so important that you sacrifice the loss of an innocent child at all. I have nieces and nephews that are growing up now, but I often wonder what would go through the hearts of my two sisters and their husbands had this happened to them. But be that as it may, I'm very familiar with this case, somewhat familiar, you know, from the past several days. I do believe it's unrealistic to expect the Pope to step down, and people have asked on TV and the radio and the press, what's going to be the outcome of this? I believe the outcome is going to be a continued bleeding of people walking away from the institutional Catholic Church, losing faith in the system.
Yeah.
May go out with a bang, and they may just walk away, but they're walking, a lot of them.
Oh, have we not seen a mass exodus already?
Oh, it's happening.
Yeah, there's no question the Catholic Church is hemorrhaging, which is why I think, do we call him Pope Benedict, Pope Ratzinger? I mean, he's got so many names.
The formal title is Pope Benedictus the 16th.
And okay.
The Romans call him, I think they call him Papa Ratzinger. They usually have a different way of calling him the Pope over there. They usually call him by his last name and first his Pope. But anyway, Pope Benedict the 16th.
Well, now we're hearing him in the news apparently with some formal apologies and maybe speaking out more than any other Pope has. Fair enough or not?
I think he has. I haven't read the Irish letter yet. I haven't had a chance to see it. But I would like to clarify one issue. I don't believe there would have been any letter to the people of Ireland or any apologies or any speaking out had there not been the intense pressure
exactly
from the public,
yep,
from the victims, from those who support them, the anger with this. Otherwise, it's the same thing in the United States and in the other countries, Canada, Ireland, Great Britain, where this has been happening. The bishops would have ignored it, and it would still be a mammoth sore on the skin of the church, and there'd be these thousands of suffering people out there had they not risen up.
Okay, which came first, apologetic words from the Pope's spin doctors, or the finding out that Monsignor Ratzinger, who was in charge of the boys choir, I believe?
Yeah, there was a choir in the town in Regensburg, I can't pronounce it correctly, in Germany, where they were from.
Okay.
He directed the boys' choir there for like 30 years.
So basically, he was the boss of the boys' choir. Sexual abuse happened. We're finding out lots about it now. It was under his watch. And now people are going, wow, this is the brother of the Pope. Which came first?
Well, the letter was directed to the Catholics of Ireland, and that was a result of the uproar that happened over the publication of what's commonly known as the Murphy Report,
right,
which was a government study.
Was that last year, Tom?
No, it was last year. It actually was November 26th, 2009, when that was published, and there was such a massive response and reaction to that in Ireland. And that had come on the heels of another big report that was published last May on sexual abuse in institutions in Ireland, orphanages, different schools, and these were all institutions run by Catholic religious orders. So you had these two together, and the people in Ireland were just outraged. And the Pope called first the Archbishop of Dublin and the Cardinal of Armagh to Rome to talk to them. Then he had all the 24 Irish bishops over. Then they said, well, I'll write him a letter, thinking that this was going to cure the problem.
Sure.
It isn't.
No.
And the common complaint of a lot of the victims and those who support them is all we get from the church is words. No action, words.
All right. In about 20 minutes, folks, we're going to ask you the question, should the Pope step down because basically He's responsible for protecting pedophile priests. Do you agree with this position or not? The number is 905-338-1250, 877-JOY-1250. Don't phone now. The phone lines will not be answered now. Now wait till we are finished speaking with Tom Doyle, who is an expert on Catholic Church sex abuse scandals and cover-ups. What in the world took Ireland and Germany so long to catch up?
I believe that the answer to that has a lot to do with the secular culture, which, you know, churches, the Catholic Church is part of our society, part of our culture. And in those countries, the Catholic Church has had a different position. It's been more protected.
Right.
There's been a lot more deference. And deference, as it was in this country, you know, in the 50s and 60s, you didn't see the media exposing this kind of horror as it's doing now.
Because there was more reverence for the Catholic Church system over there?
There was more reverence, I think, especially in Ireland, and much more control of the Catholic Church in Ireland over all the institutions, the secular institutions. You know, the Archbishop of Dublin, let's say, could call the newspaper and say, don't print this. Bingo, it didn't get printed.
Right.
And that happened over here, but much less so. And those days, I think, are gone, when that unquestioned reverence and deference for the institutional churches is there. When they would say, it's best for the good of the church not to publicize this, not to make it go public. All that meant was that it's best for the bishops and it's best for the structure.
So
these people are the church.
The American sort of, psyche of question everything, trust no one, really popped open this sex abuse stuff first. And now it's starting to bleed over into other cultures?
It first exploded in the United States in 1984-85. The next big one was in Canada, in Mount Cashel, which was 1988-89, which was that horrendous story of that Christian brothers owned an orphanage in Newfoundland, where these kids were kept captives. They were sex slaves. Anyway, that was a nightmare. So then it also, the big explosion in Ireland was in 1993 and 94 with the revelations of a marauding priest named Brendan Smith, who's now dead. He died in prison. So it takes something like this horror for people to see it, to believe that it's really true, and that's what happened here. The media got a hold of it in 1984, and they did the right thing. They publicized it. Other people came forward who had been, prior to that, afraid to come forward or felt, if we do, nobody's going to believe us, other victims and their families. And that happened, and pretty soon it started an unraveling of the protective cocoon around the church. Before that, you know, if a guy had sex with a kid and he was reported, the bishop would either transfer him or send him to, you know, therapy maybe. The few went to therapy and then back into a parish somewhere. And then if he did it again, they went through the same routine. Well, that stopped. It's pretty much stopped now because of the victims and their lawyers. And another thing that you hear a lot, these people are only in it for the money. They just want to bleed the church of its money. Well, take a look at this.
Yeah, you need to look at how much money they're getting from these.
They're not getting all that much.
No.
But the big point is, they've gone, the reason the people have gone to the civilian courts, the secular courts, what started this was when they would go to the church and they would be ignored or they'd be put off or they'd be intimidated, and they got nothing. And I remember speaking with a lot of these people back in the middle to late 80s, and the only solace they got was going to the civil courts, and all they wanted was to be believed and to be assured that these guys, these priests, were not going to have access to other children. Well, then, of course, they started, you know, monetary damages, which they have a right to. What you're seeing here is a lot of people whose lives have been ruined, period. So they get a big bunch of money from the insurance companies that the church insures with and from the churches themselves.
You know, I know that Vatican City is loaded. Nobody knows how much. Do you have a clue?
I have no clue.
Okay, but we all know they're loaded. I would love to see nothing more than the Vatican City and the Roman Catholic Church broke. Because I think only then can it rebuild on better foundations. And I don't know whether this is just sort of the cutting edge or the tip of the iceberg, all these lawsuits, etc. I wish the victims would be absolutely rewarded with copious amounts of Catholic cash. Is that too harsh?
No, I don't think it's too harsh at all. And I've felt for some time, and I've heard it from a lot of others, especially a lot of Catholics that I know who, you know, are very dissatisfied that this, what the institutional church needs is to be divest. It's a corporation. It's supposed to be the body of Christ. It's supposed to be a way of life. It started out with none of this. It started out with people gathering together, and that's what it still can be. You can be church without a cathedral.
Yeah.
And you don't need money and stained glass windows and pipe organs and all that business. You need people.
Tom, what has all of this done to your faith? Where are you at spiritually these days? Because, you know, in comparison, our mutual friend Bill Lubdell, the former religion editor with the L.A. Times, wrote this book, Losing My Religion, How I Lost My Faith Reporting on Religion in America. And one of the catalysts for his spiritual blow-up was this stack of information on his desk about the Catholic sex abuse scandals. I want to know what this has done in your spiritual life, Tom.
Well, let me just say I read Bill's book, and I really identified with it. It's done. It's almost the same, in many ways the same. It was a profoundly traumatic and something I had to work through over a several-year period of deciding or discerning what really was, did I believe in? What was belief? And do I believe in that type of a higher power, that God, that we're supposed to worship all the time or he'll get mad at us and all this nonsense? I've met so many victims. I've seen so much duplicity and dishonesty at the very core. So I dawned on me some time ago, I no longer believe that I don't need a pope or a bishop or a cardinal for spiritual health. That's something that I deal with myself and my, whatever the higher power is to me. And I don't believe that anybody needs all these structures to have a healthy spiritual life. But I'll tell you, it is extremely painful, and I've gone through the process with a lot of the victims themselves. And, you know, we identify with each other because I hear them, listen to them, and they're voicing the same feelings I've had. The
right.
Same feeling of loss, of anger, of sorrow, of sadness. I mean, I was a Catholic all my life, you know, in the system. So to say goodbye to that and to realize that it's not what I always thought it was has been profoundly painful and traumatic. But it forced me in many ways to grow up and be an adult Catholic and not a childish Catholic and an adult man. You know what I mean?
Oh, I so do. As a matter of fact, I know exactly what you mean because I get those Catholics phoning in. As a matter of fact, I know, I'm pretty sure one lady is going to phone in as soon as we open up the phone lines, and she's going to try to rake me over the coals for being a Catholic basher based on what we're talking about today. How would you push back against that, Tom? You've been told that before.
Catholic bashing is a knee-jerk reaction. The most heretical people, I think, or dissenting people, are the people that protect the men and the nuns who violate little children and young minors. What did Christ say?
Mess with these kids, and something bad, really bad, needs to happen to you, basically.
Yeah. So I no, that's, you know, what you're, if you're calling attention to the defects in the institutional church, that you have to do that.
Yeah.
That is absolutely necessary. And if you read unvarnished, revised Catholic Church history, you find out that what we're going through, there have been similar scandals and nightmares over and through history, and mostly, if not all of them, have been the clergy,
yeah,
not the lay people.
Yeah.
When there's been reform, it's been the lay people.
I need to interject for a second. It's now 1:32 here in our neck of the woods, and that means it's officially spring. So I'd like to say, Tom, happy spring to you.
Hey, happy spring to you, too. I can see green grass here where 6 weeks ago I had 32 inches of snow in my backyard.
Wow. Sorry about your luck. We had, I think this is the winter we had the least amount of snow here, so we broke a record.
Well, we did, too,
yeah,
the other end.
The other end, yeah. Well, listen, we should probably go to the calls because I'm sure there's lots of people out there that want to discuss this, that want to weigh in with their opinion. I guess we want to get your final take on this, Tom. You obviously, I would love to have you back on the show. This is something I think we need to get to a few more times before the end of the year. So I'll ask you the question we're about to ask our listeners. Again, the phone line is 905-338-1250. And 877-JOY-1250. You can give us a call right now, 905-338-1250, 877-JOY-1250. Should the Pope step down because he was responsible for protecting pedophile priests? There have been calls for the resignation of Pope Benedict XVI, And they have become louder and louder as information is being uncovered that he simply transferred a pedophile priest in his former diocese rather than having him arrested. And not only that, he signed off on some doctrine and policy statements which warned that there would be serious consequences for those that reported claims of sexual abuse and that talking to the legal authorities was forbidden. Is that the Pope you worship, folks? 905-338-1250, 877-JOY-1250. The last word goes to you, Tom. There have been calls for the Pope to step down. It's not going to happen, but do you still think he should?
You know, it's hard to say that because I'm very pragmatic. I don't think it's going to happen. But what I think the man should do, he should be put in a position where he has to sit down and spend a lot of time with some of these victims and listen to them and let them get it off their chest. And so he really understands what it's been like and what's happened. And then, if anything, I think what I hope happens, and my primary and number one concern is not only the men and women who've been sexually abused, but their mothers and fathers. I spend a lot of time with them, and you have no idea the suffering they've gone through. That something happened somewhere so that kids in the future are protected from this nightmare, and that the ones today that are still suffering find some source of real, authentic, effective care and recovery and return to both emotional and spiritual health. The church, I don't think, is going to be able to do it. The official church, the hierarchical church, isn't going to be able to do it.
Right.
But it is being done by the real church, which is the people.
Folks, there's lots of information to go to. If you go to our website, drewmarshall.ca, and click on Next Show, that'll give you all the information on what's on today's show, including a great link for information on Tom Doyle and a bunch of other organizations, including SNAP, which stands for Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. This is a brutal issue. It needs to be talked about more, and it will be talked about more on our show with your calls after we come back from this break. Tom, thank you so much for what you do. I don't know you, but thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you, seriously.
Thank you for what you're doing for the people who are suffering. This means a lot.
Tom Doyle on the Drew Marshall Show. 905-338-1250, 877-JOY-1250. Should the Pope step down because he's responsible for protecting pedophile priests? My answer? I actually don't think he should step down. I'll explain that when we come back. Stay with us.
Say what you really think. Drew does, and he's usually wrong. 905-338-1250.